Pray with me, O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles,
and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Lovely to be here tonight. Pamphlet here from Paramahansa Yogananda out of Mother's Library, The Attributes of Success. It's published in 1955, although there were earlier editions. My divine birthright. The Lord created me in His image. I will seek Him first and make sure of my actual contact with Him. Then, if it be His will, may all things, wisdom, abundance, health, be added as part of my divine birthright. I want success without measure, not from earthly sources, but from God's all-possessing, all-powerful, all-bountiful hands. The Attributes of Success. Is there a power that can reveal hidden veins of riches and uncover treasures of which we never dreamed? Is there a force that we can call upon to give health, happiness, and spiritual enlightenment? The saints and sages of India teach that there is such a power. They have demonstrated the efficacy of truth principles that will work for you too, if you give them a fair trial. Your success in life does not altogether depend on ability and training. It also depends on your determination to grasp opportunities that are presented to you. Opportunities in life come by creation, not by chance. You yourself, either now or in the past, including the past of former lives, have created all opportunities that arise in your path. Since you have earned them, use them to the best advantage. If you use all available outward means, as well as your natural abilities to overcome every obstacle in your path, you will thus develop the powers that God gave you, unlimited powers that flow from the innermost forces of your being. You possess the power of thought and the power of will. Utilize to the utmost these divine gifts. You demonstrate success or failure according to your habitual trend of thought. In you, which is the stronger, success thoughts or failure thoughts? If your mind is ordinarily in a negative state, an occasional positive thought is not sufficient to attract success. But if you think rightly, you will find your goal even though you seem to be enveloped in darkness. You alone are responsible for yourself. No one else may answer for your deeds when the final reckoning comes. Your work in the world, in the sphere where your karma, your own past activity has placed you, can be performed only by one person, yourself. And your work can be called a success only when in some way it serves your fellow man. Don't mentally review any problem constantly. Let it rest at times, and it may work itself out. But see that you do not rest so long that your discrimination is lost. Rather, use these rest periods to go deep within the calm region of your inner self. Attuned with your soul, you will be able to think correctly regarding everything you do. And if your thoughts or actions have gone astray, they can be realigned. This power of divine attunement can be achieved by practice and effort. So in Master's writing here, he begins out by saying, first, attune yourself to God. This is the primary thing that we must do. Because if we do not, our own tendencies, both good and bad tendencies, that is, habits from the past, will influence our decision-making, and they will determine whether we choose to go one way or another. If we do this, then we tend to recreate what we have already created in our lives. If you take somebody who thinks habitually in poverty, and you gave them a great deal of money, chances are they would go out and spend that money, and they would be poor within a very short amount of time. If, on the other hand, you took somebody who had learned prosperity consciousness and had learned to attract their good and all abundance to them, take away all of their money, and they would soon be about the business of collecting more until they achieved a high standard of success in that field once again. It is because we are all products of our thoughts. And so after first attuning yourself with God consciousness, the inner peace, the inner joy, the inner understanding that comes from communion with God or your deepest self, then you begin to think about what kind of thoughts are inspired from that deepest recesses of yourself. Because first, there is no thoughts. There's just a pure state of being. That sense of peace, that sense of joy, that sense of purity of mind is without any thought at all. It is not constricted. There you have complete and thorough freedom. When the spirit expresses itself as thought, it's coming from a completely different source than when it's coming from old habits. If you can picture the human consciousness as an oval or as an egg shape, and at the top third is the superconscious mind. This superconscious mind is attuned to divine consciousness. It is filled with light. It is positive. It is peaceful. It is everything good. It is what we associate with heaven. And then the middle third of that oval or that egg shape, then is your everyday consciousness. This is the battleground, you might say, from whence you wage the war in this earthly realm. It is influenced either from above or below or a mixture of both. The bottom third of the oval, then, or the egg, is then the subconscious mind. And this is the repository of everything that you have thought, said, or done, not just in this lifetime, but in all the lifetimes you've gone out incarnating as a separate soul from the one divine consciousness. Most people are most heavily influenced by their deep subconscious mind. There is a wonderful soul who follows this path. And many, many years ago, she had an experience while giving birth to one of her children. And in that experience, she went through a period of death, what we call death. Her breathing stopped, her brain functioning stopped. Now, there are some material scientists that are reductionistic about this, and they will try to say, well, people who have such experiences are just experiencing the biochemical products of a dying mind. So they see lights and they have these kinds of experiences. What it doesn't explain, of course, is how these experiences that people have in these near-death experiences are universally life-changing. How they speak to the deepest nature of each soul and how the individual comes out of that experience completely changed. It's not just a random process of the brain, but rather the physical brain and the body shutting down releases the soul so that it can go into a higher state of consciousness. It goes into the astral or the causal or into complete oneness with God depending on the development of that soul. This particular woman went into this experience, and there she saw some of her relatives that had already passed on. And she had absolute peace and equanimity. In fact, it was such a stirring experience. She thought to herself, I never want to leave here. I don't want to go back. In the midst of this experience, she became aware of her children and how much her children needed her. And the mother's heart in her reached out to her children, and that brought her back into this earthly realm. Because she had a duty here. She had something to do still while she's here. Now, this individual oftentimes has a negative trend of thought. If you ask her about something, she'll tell you what's wrong with a certain thing before she'll ever say anything right about it. And she can't wait to die in one way. She's always wanting and looking forward to death because, you see, she's not afraid of it. She's been there. She knows what it's all about. And she's anxious and eager to go. But really, this isn't the right thing. Because she really hasn't learned to appreciate the life that she has been given. And that there are great opportunities with this life. We can think that our life is something that we have not voluntarily entered into. We have come into this life. It's difficult to be in a human body. It's filled with pain. It's filled with ignorance. It's filled with bumps and bruises and hurts all along the way. And we can begin to think in a very negative kind of a way. And if we do, we begin to create a shadow, a cloud hanging around us. It's called depression. And if we think habitually enough along those lines for long enough, our body will join in the act and suddenly we're in a difficult state. Because not only is our mind in the habit of thinking negatively about things, but now our body is also feeding into the program as well. And so in order to change that, we have to begin to first change the mind. But we have to want to do it. I described last week how I felt that there was an infection, a cold, or a flu that was coming on me. And I had been fighting it for about a week already. And when I woke up that morning, the first thing that came to me was that my throat was a little scratchy and I was feeling a little tired. And I could feel myself being seduced into the idea, oh, it'd just be kind of comfortable just to settle into that, just to let it come on me. I caught the thought when it came to me. And I knew that this didn't represent my highest good. I had things to do. I had places to go and people to see. And so I sternly sent that away. In addition to that, I began to call upon higher forces, these internal forces, that can come in and begin to aid us. We're not alone in this life. That's a delusion of the ego that makes us feel as if we are alone. I am not alone. You are not alone. We never have been. But when the mind thinks it is, and it cuts itself off from all the wonderful resources that we have, we can feel very, very alone. But this is not the truth. Even when we feel alone, we are not truly alone. So we have this spirit this self, this pure God essence within that we first access by quieting the mind and the body. And then we are inspired with thought, a positive thought, a thought to create. Master then moves on to the next thing. Along with positive thinking, you should use willpower and continuous activity in order to be successful. Every outward manifestation is the result of will, but this power is not always used consciously. There is mechanical will as well as conscious will. The dynamo of all your powers is volition or willpower. Without volition, you cannot walk, talk, work, think, or feel. Therefore, willpower is the spring of all your actions. In order not to use this energy, you would have to be completely inactive both physically and mentally. Even when you move your hand, you are using willpower. It is impossible to live without using this force. Mechanical will is an unthinking use of willpower. Conscious will is a vital force accompanying determination and effort, a dynamo that must be wisely directed. As you train yourself to use conscious, not mechanical will, you must also be sure that your willpower is being used constructively, not for harmful purposes, nor for useless acquisitions. To create dynamic willpower, determine to do some of the things in life that you thought you could not do. Attempt simple tasks first. Then, as your confidence strengthens, you will become more dynamic. You can aim for more difficult accomplishments. Be certain that you have made good selection. Then refuse to submit to failure. Devote your entire willpower to mastering one thing at a time. Do not scatter your energies, nor leave something half done to begin a new venture. In these short paragraphs, Master has described a terrific thing. The development of will can be compared to the development of muscle. If you're going to work out for the first time in a long time, you don't want to take on too much that first time. You want to stretch the body a little bit. You want to push it a little bit, but not too far, not too much, or you won't go back to it. Or perhaps you'll injure your body. So you start out by mastering something simple. You look around in your life. Perhaps there's something that you've been avoiding doing. You just haven't done it. You keep on thinking you should, but you don't. Those things usually come up at New Year's when you're thinking about how you want to change your life for the coming year. So it can be just a simple chore around the house. It can be something that you've been putting off for a long time, and so you do it. And when you do it, you don't do it part way. You do it all the way. There's an engineer friend of mine one time, and he was telling me that in engineering, according to him, there's a certain principle called the 80% rule. And whenever you go to do any particular kind of project, there's always the kind of initial hump you have to get over to get started on it. He said, then everything will go along swimmingly until you get to the 80% mark, and then distractions will come up, obstacles will come up, difficulties will come up that you hadn't anticipated. And now you have to get past that 80% place in order to accomplish the subject. Now, how many of us have incomplete subjects all around us? And it's because perhaps we get to that 80% place and suddenly something seems easier. I'm a great product of that. I can be going along and just doing well on certain project, and suddenly starting a new project seems like a good thing to do, and so I start another thing and then another thing. And suddenly I have three or four things all going at once. I got in such a habit about this that I would have three or four bookmarks and different marks, and I'd be trading books back and forth, and sometimes not completing them. And I decided, well, that's a place for me to start. I'll finish that book before I start another one. And sometimes it was a real struggle. I just really wanted to get started on something else, but I forced myself to go all the way to complete that book so that I could break myself of that habit. So in order to use a will, we begin to exercise it like a muscle. We take on a few things in our life, and we become conscious about it. There are so many times that we set out on projects and we just do things, but we're not very thoughtful about it. We're not very mindful about what the process is that we do. So you can very consciously become aware of the beginning, middle, and ends of projects, and that each stage is very important. And that when you really start out on a project with a determination to complete it, no matter what, you will be more careful about what you say yes to. Because if you just change from one thing to the other, you can take on more and more and more, because what's the difference? You don't finish it anyway. But when you have determined that you're going to finish it, come hell or high water, so to speak, then you are very careful about what you take on to your plate, because you know that you have committed yourself 100% to completing whatever it is you have set out to do. And so will is this muscle that you begin to exercise, and it gets stronger. And when it gets stronger, you're able to take on more. You're able to complete more. You're able to broaden your vision and see further down the road. And this is a great thing to be able to do. Now, when you're attuning yourself to the divine mind, then you are inspired from within as to what you should be doing next. But nevertheless, you use all of this willpower for doing and completing what the divine mind has set out for you. The only difference is, if you're not aware, really, of your intuitional mind, and you're not really attuned to the divine consciousness and how it's creating through you, then you do the best that you can with what you have. You have a positive thought, and it's a creation of something new. It doesn't harm anybody. It could be for the benefit of others as well as to yourself. And so you make an analysis of it. And once you've analyzed that it doesn't create harm and that it will create a good, then you set out to do it. This is human intention and human will. When you become aware that there is divine will, a higher consciousness operating through you, it comes in through the medulla and into your brain. Mother described it as having a direct pipeline to God. Divine consciousness then flows through you, and it comes in thought forms, but it is also beyond thought. Because you are lifted up and filled with a divine consciousness from toe to head, to the top of your head. Last week I was scheduled to come up here, and there's very few times I think I can count them on one hand, less than one hand, of how many times I've not been able to fulfill a commitment to come and serve when I have made that. But this is one of those times, and in this case, the divine consciousness came and it lifted me up. And it withdrew all the life force from this body. This body just hung like a limp rag doll. The consciousness was lifted up into the higher regions of the brain and beyond. If you've seen the pictures of the Buddha, and the Buddha has coiled hair on his head, or he has rings that appear to be rings or circles up above his head, each one smaller than the next, and there will be three rings and then perhaps a spire at the top of it all. And this represents the three bodies, your three bodies, the physical body, the astral or the electrical body, and the causal or idea body. Those are your three bodies. And what the Buddha did was he went beyond all three. And those are symbolized by these three rings at the top of his head. And then the spire at the top represents the consciousness that has been released from all three bodies. Now, this wasn't just for the Buddha. He came to show the way, even as Jesus did, even as Krishna did, even as Mohammed did. And these great saints, these great avatars, come at particular times in order to lift up humanity and to give the means in order to ascend to higher consciousness. So when you do that, you have this pipeline that comes directly into your consciousness. You know that it's not your thoughts. It doesn't come from the lower part of the oval or the egg, the subconscious mind. It is streaming down to you as with light. In fact, there are many times when you turn your consciousness within, you close your eyes, and your entire inner being becomes molten light. Life force, when it's seen from this standpoint, is liquid-like. And the sweetness of it, the nectar, the amrita of it, is beyond description. It is so remarkable to go within and to begin to really get lifted up into these experiences, to know what it is to reside in the divine consciousness. And when you do, then you surrender your will. You know that there is something greater than yourself. But until that experience comes, you may be just using your own reason, your own intuitive mind, the lower intuitive mind, to the best of your ability, and that's all right. Because by attuning yourself constantly in this way, you will purify the mind and the consciousness until you come to the point where you're able to consciously be a part of this. So you learn about the right use of the life energy. The human brain is a storehouse of life energy. This energy is constantly employed in muscular movements, in the working of the heart, lungs, and diaphragm, in cellular metabolism and chemicalization of blood, and in carrying out the work of the telephonic, sensory, motor system, the nerves. Besides this, a tremendous amount of life energy is required in all process of thought, emotion, and will. Fear exhausts life energy. It is one of the greatest enemies of dynamic willpower. Fear causes the life force that ordinarily flows steadily through the nerves to be squeezed out, and the nerves themselves to become as though paralyzed. The vitality of the whole body is lowered. Fear doesn't help you to get away from the object of fear. It only weakens your willpower. Fear causes the brain to send an inhibiting message to all bodily organs. It constricts the heart, checks the digestive functions, and causes many other physical disturbances. When the consciousness is kept on God, you will have no fears. Every obstacle will then be overcome by courage and faith. That's quite a statement. When consciousness is kept on God, you will have no fears. Every obstacle will then be overcome by courage and faith. Now, how can Master say this? It is because that when you have your mind really turned on God, not out of fear or not through fear, most people entertain the idea of God, but they do it through a prism. And many times that prism can be fear. It's when they come up against obstacles, it's when they're in trouble, that they pray to God. But their mind really isn't on God in an intimate, direct way. It's an indirect way. It's casting out a thought, a plea, an idea that you would like some help, but it feels far from you. It feels distant from you. But when you really put your mind on God, you feel the presence of God. When you feel the presence of God, you cannot feel fear in that same moment. The darkness hateth the light. And the light is the presence of God, and the darkness is fear. Therefore, when you really put your mind on God, you are filled with peace. You are filled with courage. You are filled with divine determination. And that determination will see you through every event. There may be some times when that determination results in the death of the body. But you never need be separated from God, even as you march into the jaws of death. If you could feel yourself so filled with vital life force and an inner determination, a spiritual determination and will, and that what you're focused on is fulfilling that divine will, and that you are surcharged with that divine consciousness. And even if, as I say, that took you to the moment where there was a death of the body, you would be instantly freed from the physical body. And you would rise up into God omnipresent, because your mind would be completely and totally purified by keeping it totally and constantly upon the one divine nature that has created you, it has created me, and it has created all creation. You see, it is the ego mind that has told you and fooled you into thinking that this world is made up of multiplicity. It has fooled you into thinking that you are separate, first of all, from your Creator, from the divine consciousness. Secondly, it has fooled you into thinking that you are separate from your brother and sister, everyone, your neighbor, and it's everyone that you meet. It's everyone you come into contact with. And the moment you enter into that kind of duality, you lose the one divine guiding principle that is always with you and will always be with you. We let our mind go out to this world. We are, as it were, worshipping idol images. We have put something up on the altar that is not the total and complete divine package. It is something less than. And whenever you give something more power than you do the divine consciousness, you are creating, and you are creating an obstacle and a field of separation between you and the divine consciousness. So this we must not do. This we must reverse and put God first. Put our whole and complete attention upon God. And no matter what comes to you, inwardly or outwardly, within your body or from this world, within your own mind or from the thoughts of others, you don't give it more power than you do the connection of that presence. Brother Lawrence practiced this wonderful practice, practicing the presence of God. And if you can do that one thing, wherever you go, whatever you do, whomever you speak to, your mind is always dwelling upon that inner divine presence. And you feel it, and you move in it, and you allow it to move through you. And that one practice will take you all the way to divine consciousness. You need nothing else. But in order to do this, you have to keep your mind upon God always. So this is the attitude of success, because when you abide by these few principles, you have aligned yourself with the highest and most complete consciousness. You don't give in to anything lower, and you always keep your mind on the absolute. Through this, you become completely purified, and now you live completely in this divine consciousness always. Nothing can take you away from it. Nothing in this world. Only you can decide to separate yourself from that divine consciousness. And that's the big divine joke when you awaken, is you realize that all this time that you spent complaining about the world or the universe that God created was actually a figment of your own conditioning of your own mind. And so we take these attributes of success, we put them to work in our lives, and we bring ourselves into a new state of mind, a brand new, we are reborn. And then success spontaneously and automatically flows through us and around us. It doesn't mean that everything just goes perfectly so, because as long as you're here, you have work to do. But you're given all the means to complete that work. And you know it. You have complete and total understanding and faith in it. And that makes all the difference.